Hello everybody, this is Brady Guzet again, and this is Soul to Soul, and we are continuing our wonderful journey today with Lara Bardsley, the psychologist and artist who's been taking us through her journey and her analysis about the role of art and the awareness of self and how all of those elements come together. And today we're going to the dark side of it. We're going to have a look at art angst and the role of pain and upset in the art world. Is it necessary for an artist to live a life that is painful in order for their art to be able to say something so much more in so many more ways? So without further ado, please welcome back the lovely Lara Bardsley. Welcome back, my dear.
Thank you, Brody.
Now, the artist then, is it necessary for an artist to live a life of pain and abuse and all the rest of it so that their art can go to a higher plane, do you think?
No, I don't think. And the reason why I don't think that is because invariably human beings that are suffering and angst-ridden don't necessarily do their greatest work in those spaces. I mean, having said that, there's been some incredible artists who have all ended up a bit dead in various forms, or, you know, via chopping off ears or having mental illness, or
Brett Whiteley in our time, you know.
Doing too many drugs, or I think the artistic process is challenging, is difficult, is unraveling. I think the artist's temperament is highly sensitive and deeply feeling. And if you put a highly sensitive, deeply feeling person in a challenging world, or allow them to grow up in a fractured family, you're going to get amplified suffering. And, you know, it's not unusual for artists to have come from a lot of suffering and to be creating a lot of suffering in their lives. And they seek, I think, speaking for myself, they seek a feeling space, they seek immersion. And it's all too easy to become immersed in an experience that isn't necessarily one that will lead to transcendence, even if that was our first hope. So I think we always seek happiness. I think it's human nature to seek happiness and completion. Sometimes the way we do that, it becomes agony in itself. You know, if it's to make copious amounts of money, but at the expense of our health or our family, or whether it's to have a feeling of being sociable and carefree through taking drugs, and then the impact of that and what it does to our relationships or our family or our bodies. Or it might be that we have access to incredible palette of emotions, so that the darks and the lights and the highs and the lows, and in, I think, Van Gogh's experience of manic depression, you know, I mean, there were probably times in that mania where he was, you know, incredibly in a space of profound creativity, and then times when the darkness was agonizing for him. And yeah, look, I mean, he created exceptionally beautiful work, and if he'd been alive in this current day and age, and heavily medicated for bipolar disorder, then maybe he wouldn't have been so able to access the states of consciousness that created the beautiful works. But maybe he would have, and maybe he would have lived a bit longer and created even more beautiful works. I don't think suffering is necessary. However, having said that, I think I know plenty of artists that do suffer. And whether or not that's suffering for their art, or the fact that they like a bit too much of a drug or alcohol, or, you know, are so overwhelmed by the aesthetic of beauty or physical beauty or lust, that they tend to destroy a whole heap of their committed relationships. But having said that, you know, there's plenty of artists, maybe not necessarily super famous ones, that have husbands or wives or children and, you know, and just great, sensitive people and that are creating beautiful works.
Yes, I think I think I've been amiss during our conversation is that I've tended to have a leaning towards the canvas-based artist. But, of course, there are so many artists in so many media, whether that's pottery or glass or, you know, sculpture in bronzes, whatever it might be, there are so many other ways of declaring visual interest that I've probably let the side down a bit there. But that being said, though, is that there's one thing that tends to be, I think, that peculiar to a painting is that it is an environment of attack. You can attack a painting either with, you know, the way that you go about it or whatever.
It can be a very physical process on a number of levels, making art or even performance art. I mean, it's pure physicality.
You've done some of that too, haven't you?
I was a performance street performer at one stage. I wouldn't necessarily call that art, but it was fun. You know, there are some really powerful performance pieces that are purely about acting out, expressing the human condition, and remarkably powerful. But I think, I mean, if you look at a human story, if you look at the story of a human being, there will be times in the life of that human being where there's a lot of angst. And we all, you know, we talk about adolescent angst, but I think it's well and truly not defined to adolescence that the human race goes through angst. And I think as an artist, if you express what you're experiencing through your work, then there's a lot of work that comes from that angst-ridden space. However, I don't think it needs to be, you need to be in angst in order to create some wonderful work.
No.
I think if you're in angst, you sort of want to justify it if you want to keep behaving in that way and therefore decide that, you know, you're an artist and it's all about angst. And,
well, that's true, but then there are people, there are artists who have specifically used substances, either hallucinogenics or whatever it might be, as a specific tool to unlock or expose or whatever their work, whether that's not necessarily painting, but that, you know, writing and Alice in Wonderland and, you know, what have you. I don't think that there's been areas where the substance use has played a role.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, I think the use of psychedelics or mind expanding substances is possibly a different kettle of fish. You are looking there at the opportunity to use Wilbur's word, I think, is you know, open the doors of perception. However, it's not the only way to do that. There are other ways to experience an altered state or a transcendent state or a state that takes you out of the everyday way in which you think, that isn't necessarily using mind-altering substances.
But it is using the mind.
Now, that's an interesting thing, isn't it? Because if you talk about me or I, would you be saying then that that's located in your mind? Maybe, if, you know, it's your brain. If you were in a coma, you wouldn't be talking to me about I. But I guess what I'm talking about there is that there is the mind, the thinking tool, and then there is the self or the heart or the presence or the energy of, it was separate from the soul, that essence of self, that feeling, which isn't necessarily a thought space.
One of the things I was found so intriguing about the human body is the fact that the brain has no feeling. It is inert. You can prod your way around there happily and not feel a thing until you prod something that says that you're prodding, you know, your feet. It's your feet that hurt. And I find that at an emotional, arguably at a spiritual level, it's something that's rather special. It is something that is the very essence of who you are, and yet in some respect it's constantly dead. It is not, because it has no other feeling. It doesn't have feeling in itself.
It doesn't experience pain.
No, no. It doesn't experience anything. It just works. It just has a job to do. And I think I think there's probably a whole couch episode for that one.
Well, there is. And at the same time, we know so little about that sense of the transcendent or the spiritual and its location in the brain. I mean, we know a little bit about emotional regulation and interpretation. We know now a little bit about how the brain can continue to evolve and be plastic and in the right environment reprogram itself, not only to do things that it's lost the ability to do, say through stroke, but to actually think in ways that are transformative, so that a highly depressed and dark and angst-ridden person, whether they be artist or not, can learn to
be a happy one.
Be a happy artist and make pretty things. No. The brain's a remarkable tool. But to get back to your initial question, angst is an aspect of the human experience that I don't necessarily subscribe to. I don't think, I think it's something we all experience at times, but I don't think it's a valid place to rest, and I don't think it's necessary to create work, artwork out of.
It's not a... It doesn't necessarily improve. Right. Although it does potentially cultivate something to do with the myth of the artists themselves, and therefore add street cred, or want of a better description, to...
I don't think you can go through the creative process, which in itself is a death and a rebirth, and constantly so. It's a deconstructive, self-doubting, emergence. It's a birthing experience, and there's blood and muck and goop and hard work, and that's what it is to be an artist. And of course there is suffering. I'm not saying there isn't, and I think that's a necessary part of creating, and you have to remind yourself when you're wanting to have a lovely time painting and you're having a blood and guts and goo sort of experience that, it is part of the process. It's not easy. However, I don't think you have to go, okay, all right, I better sort of beat myself up a bit because I need to get some inspiration today, or I'm going to behave really badly, or I've just been obnoxious to my partner and my environment is falling apart, so I should make some really good art now.
Oh dear. Well, on that note, that brings us close to our close for today. And I think we've got next week. I think that's likely to be. I'm going to be sad to say this, but it's going to be likely to be the final in the series. And I want to say now how much I've enjoyed it. So until next week, where I want to look at your collective experience and look at the spiritual component that sits there, the sense of self in that, as you reach your premiere period in your time on our planet. And we'll find out much more about that next week. So from me and from the lovely Lara, it's farewell, and we hand you back to the guys back in the studio and Soul to Soul. See you next week.